Well, after yesterday's show, I had a real treat. It's one of the reasons this job is so much fun. I went to a dress rehearsal of Australian Opera's, or Australia, Opera Australia's new production of Rigoletto by Verdi. Now, this opera premiered in 1851, and you'd have to say it's one of the world's most performed operas. It's essentially about these two characters, Rigoletto, the hunchback, and his pure and virtuous daughter, Gilda. Yes, Rigoletto and his daughter, just very pleased to be father and daughter. That's what they're singing about, essentially. That's Alan Opie and Emma Matthews singing there for Opera Australia back in 2010. So the story goes like this. The Duke of Mantua is a wealthy womanizer, and his court jester is Rigoletto, who laughs along with the Duke's philandering ways until the Duke seduces Rigoletto's own daughter, Gilda. And Gilda is Rigoletto's sole joy in life, and now she's been defiled, she's been used by the Duke, and Rigoletto is filled with grief and humiliation and rage, and he hires an assassin to murder the Duke, but it all goes tragically wrong. Roger Hodgman is the director of this production. His list of credits is enormous. He's directed theatre and opera and musicals and TV, all sorts of things. Roger, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael.
And bass baritone Daniel Semeghi is with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
You need a doctor, or your victims need a doctor. You play Sparafucile.
That's right.
He's a very nasty man indeed.
Well, yes, he is, I guess. He kills people for a living.
He kills people for a living. That's nasty. I know that you believe in your character because that's what performers do, but the rest of us know.
But he's the only person in the opera who doesn't lie.
Yes, he does have a strange... Let's talk about his strange set of principles, because actually he behaves in a quite principled way.
Completely.
Yes, he does. All right, let's... Roger, paint a picture for us. We're in a city where the will of the Duke is all powerful. Mm-hmm. He's not so much a kind of... arch villain is sort of thoughtlessly cruel.
Yes, I think he's a typical womanizer. I think he's corrupt, in as much as I think he kills off his enemies, seduces anyone who comes his way, probably falls in love with them for the brief time until he has them, and then looks for the next one. He sings about that twice in the opera, including La Donna e Mobile, about how faithfulness is not something that he's interested in. But I think he is thoughtless in a way. I think that's true.
And he's surrounded by a court of people who remind me of prefect bullies at a private school. I mean, they just love tormenting people.
We worked really hard to try and get a sense of this really unpleasant, testosterone-driven court. The first scene, there's a party going on upstage, a sort of formal dance, but downstage it's a bit like the locker room of a football club, I suppose. All these mates and five or six scantily dressed courtesans there to entertain them, and it's pretty ugly, I think. And it's in the text. I think it is it was a very political opera at the time. The original play, Le Roi s'amuse, by Victor Hugo, lasted 1.5 performances before it got banned, and when Verdi decided to use it as the source for his libretto, he and his librettist were absolutely told by the Venetian authorities, absolutely not, because it was too political. Yeah. It showed.
The original play, the title translates something like "The King Gets His Kicks," basically.
Yeah, basically, yes, that's right.
All right, let's talk some more about Sparafucile. Perhaps we could hear one of the songs that Sparafucile sings with Rigoletto. This is David Parkin singing the role. Let's just hear a bit of this.
Niente, gli chiedi, a voi presente o no, di spodestà,
un ladro,
un uomo che libera per poco da un rivale.
La vostra donna
David Parkin as Sparafucile Alinope as Rigoletto. That's, again, from the Opera Australia's production back from 2010. So what's happening there, Daniel?
Rigoletto has come away from the Duke's court, where he's been cursed by Monterone, because Rigoletto made fun of the fact that Monterone is outraged that his daughter has just been molested by the Duke.
So we haven't explained that. There is this other character, another nobleman,
yes,
called Monterone, who's had exactly the same thing happen to him already. His daughter's, yes, been violated by the Duke, and Rigoletto has joined in the taunting.
He has, and he's been cursed, and he's coming away from that, going home.
Yeah.
And he just says, oh, I've been cursed. And then out of the shadows comes this man from nowhere to say, if you've got a problem, I can fix it for you.
Mm, that's you.
Yeah, it's me. And he doesn't really bite, and he goes, well, wait on, how much would it be for an important person? He goes, well, you know, the price is a little bit higher there, but we'll get the job done. And he says, where can I find you? He says, I'm always around here at night. I'm here, I'm your man.
Mm. And then Act 2, I should say, listener, that I missed Act 1 because I was talking to you yesterday morning, but I dashed out of here, went over to the rehearsal and managed to come in for Act 2. So yes. Act 2 pretty much opens with you sharpening your knife in the shadows.
Yeah, he's getting ready because he's been hired for the job. He's just preparing. Midnight's coming and the job's got to be done.
It's really sort of gothic. Actors love playing villains. Do you love? Are you a villain lover?
My voice type.
I was going to say bass baritones get used to it, don't they?
My voice type is allocated to villains most of the time. Villains, fathers, priests. Mm. Very rarely are you the good guy, or are you the guy who gets the girl?
No, it's odd, isn't it? Tenors tend to get the girl by and large. Mm-hmm. Now, Roger, you're the director, and directors love to give Rigoletto a new location.
Mm.
So it's been set, I've been looking at this, it's been set in a strip club, it's been set in Las Vegas. Lindy Hume for Queensland Opera set it in the world of Berlusconi, in the sort of party scene. Last time Opera Australia did it, Elijah Mashinsky made it a sort of mafia story. Now, you've been very brave. You've really gone out on a limb here. You've set this in the 16th century as per the stage directions, Act 1, Mantua, 16th century.
Yes. Richard Roberts and I did a production for Oz Opera many years ago, which we did in modern dress. The men in Italian men in Armani suits. And I think I probably thought I'd always do something similar if I got the chance to do it again. But when Lyndon asked me to do it, and knowing the Mashinsky production is wonderful,
yeah,
but is set in the 60s as well.
And Lyndon Terracini, who runs Opera Australia.
Sorry. And Richard and I, we agreed to meet to discuss it, and we both arrived saying, you know what, I reckon we should set it back in the original period, which we've done. It's not in any way an elaborate reconstruction of 1530. It hints at it, it gestures at it. The set is very simple and flexible and has sort of modern feel as well. And the wonderful costumes by Tracy Grant Lord. I'm sure a lot of people come out and say, oh, it's so nice to see 16th century costumes. They're not remotely 16th century costumes. They have some of the lines of 16th century and inspired by some paintings of the period, but they're also inspired by Fortuny, the Italian clothing designer of around 1900,
but it does feel as though it's set in the olden days.
Yes, and it was deliberate. We thought it's such a wonderful story, and classics become classics because wherever they're set, they still speak to us. And that story, particularly of Rigoletto and Gilda, that you mentioned, the obsessive love between father and daughter. Unhealthily obsessive, where the daughter is the one thing he cares about in his life.
So do you think that's what it's about, do you? I mean, we should explain that Rigoletto is basically humiliated every time he goes to work because he's the fool in the court.
And he's a hunchback.
And he's a hunchback, yeah. When he comes home, we discover that at home he has a kind of beautiful life. He's got this beautiful daughter who he treats as the only pure and glorious thing in his life, and she has dignity. But he's keeping her a sort of prisoner in the house. He only lets her out to go to church.
He doesn't want her to grow up, basically. And she's reached the point in her life where she wants to. And so she falls in love with the Duke. And I think the tragedy, I mean, at the very end, the last thing Rigoletto says, the curse, you know, when he realises that his daughter is dead, and he says, Monterone's curse. But I think that's not right. I think what's caused the downfall is his own obsessive love and possessiveness, really, of his daughter. And Warwick, there's a moment just at the very end where I think Warwick Pfeiffer, who plays Rigoletto, is hinting at that realization. Right. Maybe it was easy.
See, I didn't read it that way. I thought that really what killed the girl and what brings about such tragedy is this bullying culture of the court.
That
he sort of doesn't have many options. He's a man without power.
Absolutely. But it all goes back to if he'd allowed his daughter to go out and meet the world, as she asks, can I not do, I think it would have been a different story. I think Rigoletto's real downfall is his obsessiveness and his obsessive love of his daughter. And I mean, many, many other themes as well, yeah. Of course, but that's, to me, the thing that resonates most strongly.
We should hear the big tune, otherwise people will ring in. So the big tune from Rigoletto is this, and it translates basically as, a woman is flighty, always changing her mind, like a feather in the wind. Yes, and people all over Australia are singing along. Everyone. I mean, it's like a pop song, really.
Well,
isn't it?
It's absolutely like a pop song. It's probably using some existing tunes. He gave it to the tenor very, very late in the rehearsal period. And the story goes that the next morning, the gondoliers in Venice were singing it. And one of the things I love about it is that he sings it quite casually, just while he's waiting to meet Spartaficini's sister, who's preparing herself upstairs. And it doesn't have a big finish. Like, it is this great piece, but it doesn't actually finish.
Yeah, it just wanders off. Yeah. Off he goes. Yeah.
I love that. Jonathan Miller, in another famous production, which was set in Little Italy in America, did a very brave thing. He actually just had him turn on the radio, and it was on the radio, or a jukebox. He put some money in a jukebox, was on a jukebox. And it has that quality of just this little popular song that he just happens to be singing.
Daniel, I'll never hear it the same way again now that I've watched the opera, because actually it's a totally disgusting song. It's so irresponsible. This man just jaunts his way through life. Can you get out of villain mode for a moment, just to kind of join a conversation that's based on normal moral values? I mean,
oh my God, normal moral values. You're talking to a singer.
Do you know what I mean, though?
Yes. Well, I think you said he was thoughtless. He's just completely selfish.
Yeah.
And he's come in to this tavern to, he's heard about Sparafucile's sister, and she will give it out. Yeah. And that's all it is.
And so the song recurs, and in fact it's an important clue later on. It's what tips off Rigoletto to the fact that everything's gone terribly wrong. Now, you've actually seen this story from both sides of the ledger, because you've also played Count Monteroni.
That's right.
In Los Angeles. So you know what it's like to be on the other side.
Of what?
Of the Duke's philandering.
Oh, I see. Well, okay. If we were in a real-life situation, I would be. But, of course, when you play Monteroni, it's one of the shortest roles you could imagine doing. You sing for 90 seconds, and you spend more time putting on your makeup and your costume than you do performing.
And doing your scales.
Doing your scales. So,
But it's a really impressive moment. It might be 90 seconds, but it's very impressive.
Oh, Verdi said that was a very crucial role. Mm. And if it was undercast, it would really set bad tone for the evening. Mm.
Is it a melodrama?
Yes. I think it's a psychodrama, really. Wonderful conductor Renato Palumbo likens it to a Hitchcock movie, and I think it does have. It moves incredibly fast. Every scene, every section is quite different from the one before.
Mm. But it's got lots of the aspects of melodrama.
Absolutely,
The Virtuous Maiden,
absolutely.
Dark and Stormy Night, Murder
absolutely.
In the Shadows.
Absolutely,
an extremely compact time frame.
Mm.
That it's much it is much longer than you're sitting in the theatre for 2.5 hours with the intermission, but the story is so compact.
Yeah, it happens in a flash, doesn't it?
Yes, the first two acts basically happen in 24 hours, and then there's this gap, and then there's one extraordinary night.
Well, so much to think about. All these terrible incidents and all this lovely music. Just what that's about, this lovely music. That's lots to think about. Why there's all this cheery music and this terrible story.
Life is opera.
Yes. But that, I think, is a direct, for me, that's one of the most extraordinary things about it, just the juxtaposition of these quite black images and this utterly beautiful music.
Well, I was thrilled to see Act Two, and thank you so much for coming in and having a chat.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Roger Hodgman is the director of Rigoletto for Opera Australia, and Daniel Sumeghi is performing the role of Sparafucile, who's a very nasty chap indeed. And that production is on the Arts Centre in Melbourne from the 12th of April through to the 10th of May.